Reverse order. Amazon Web Services now is the largest contributor to revenue, it has said.
Well, not to revenue. It's a big contributor to profit. Our retail business, by the way, in our established countries, is also very profitable. We keep investing, so we're investing in video, original content with Amazon Studios and so on. But Amazon Web Services is a is remarkable, I think, for a couple of reasons. It follows all those principles that I laid out at the beginning. But one of the most unusual things that happened with Amazon Web Services is the amount of runway that we got, which is a gift, before we faced like-minded competition. We had, it appears to me just empirically that if you invent a new way of doing something, typically, if you're lucky, you get about 2 years of runway before competitors copy your idea. And 2 years is actually a pretty long time in a fast-moving industry, so that's a big head start. For whatever reason, and I have a hypothesis of what the reason is, but for whatever reason, Amazon Web Services got 7 years of runway before we faced like-minded competition. There were other people doing similar kinds of things, but not the same way and not with the same approach and the same mindset. And in my experience, that's unheard of, to get so much runway. And I think the reason that that happened is because the incumbents in technology for enterprises, sort of infrastructure technology for enterprises, thought that what we were doing was just so damn weird that it could never work. We just kept very quiet about it. We knew it was working, and we would read news stories that would say things like, "Do you really think anybody is going to buy mission critical enterprise infrastructure from an online bookseller?" And we would look at that. Yeah. You know, certain people were opining on that, and we would read those articles, and we would look at our business statements, and we'd be like, "Well, we are." So we kind of knew, we got very lucky. That was a gift, and what that allowed us to do was build a gigantic advantage in terms of the feature set and the service offerings and the cost structure and everything else, that you just can't wave a magic wand and do that quickly. It takes takes years and years.
Yeah, but I mean, the central point, it seems to me,
Now we're not stopping. So that team is, every year, 500, 600, 700, 800 new features and services, so they keep pushing on that. That team is just doing an amazing job.
The other thing is Amazon Prime, the second pillar, Amazon Prime. Somewhat 65 million members of Amazon Prime.
But we don't reveal that, so I don't want to nod.
Right. Why is that? Why is it so crucial for your future, Prime?
Well, Prime is what we want Prime to be, and what we've developed it into over time is it's the best of Amazon. So you can get basically, if you join Prime, we want to have our core service be outstanding, and anybody who wants to use Amazon and not be a Prime member should have a great experience. And people who are not Prime members, for example, can still get free shipping. They have to buy a certain number of products, they have to get above a certain shipping hurdle, a certain product kind of order basket hurdle. I think it's $49. And if they get above that $49 hurdle, then they can get free shipping. And so what we did with Prime is say, look, you can get free shipping without joining Prime, but if you want fast free shipping, our best service, then you need to join Prime.
It's $99 a year.
It's $99 a year. And then we started adding other benefits to it that we know that people like. So we started out, we added Prime Video, which has been a very successful new benefit for Prime. We started many years ago. We added just, 10 or 20,000 shows, and they were all licensed, and they were all reruns. It was things like Gilligan's Island. And it was kind of a by-the-way offering. So we said, look, you already are a Prime member. Here's a new benefit. We know it's not the most important TV shows in the world, but It also isn't costing you anything extra.
But the important.
And so it grew, and now we're doing, you know, Emmy Award winning and Golden Globe Award winning original content that, again, you get access to just with, at no additional charge, just being a Prime member.
So getting into the creative part of the entertainment business, what was the motivation for that?
Well, from a business point of view, there are two different ways to think about that. We always start with the customer-centric point of view, and then, so what? How can we, if we're going to make original content, which Amazon Studios is doing, how can it be better or different from the so much content that's out there that you could license already and not have to make yourself? And the fact of the matter is that the over-the-top streaming services with a subscription model can in fact make different kinds of content. So a show like Transparent, which has won Golden Globes and Emmys, is it's not a show that could be successfully done on broadcast TV, because broadcast TV needs a much bigger audience for that. Transparent, we want to make shows that are somebody's favorite show. And on broadcast TV, you can be very happy if you have a big show that is, you know, 20 million people's third favorite show. And so you can actually think about the creative process a little differently. You can attract different storytellers. You can go for stories that are narrower, but incredibly powerful and well told. Mozart in the Jungle is the same way. I don't see how Mozart in the Jungle, another one that has won Golden Globes and Emmys, I don't see how it could be successful on broadcast TV either. And so we can attract a different kind of a storyteller who wants to tell a certain kind of story. And then there are other things that are just tailwinds in this business that are happening because of HBO and Netflix and others that, 10 years ago, you couldn't get A-list talent to do TV. They perceived it as stigmatizing. And today, that's just completely inverted. Today, A-list talent wants to do serialized TV. Yeah. You can, because the quality of the storytelling is so high, that's just completely flipped on its head.
And I've listed three pillars. What might be the fourth pillar?
Well, it could be, we don't know yet, is the real answer. And I think it's very hard to identify. We do a lot of different things, and these things will, the fourth pillar will rise and distinguish itself. We'll put energy into many things. I'm optimistic about things like Amazon Studios, so the original content. I think that actually could become a fourth pillar on its own.
Right.
And I think that what we're doing with natural language understanding and Echo and Alexa could become a fourth pillar.
Everybody talks about artificial intelligence. Everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, and everybody is investing in artificial intelligence.
Rightly so. This is,
what does it
this
add?
Is a real thing.
Enlarge on that, and also on the idea of what Echo is and how it may very well be the beginning on the edge, the wedge into artificial intelligence that benefits everybody.
Well, Echo is a small black cylinder that is, it has seven microphones on the top, and it has a speaker inside and a digital signal processor and some other compute inside. And it's Wi-Fi connected to the cloud. And Alexa, the agent, the artificially intelligent agent that lives in the cloud, can talk to you through Alexa, I mean through Echo. And one of the interesting things about Echo, the device, is it uses those seven microphones to do something called beamforming. And so basically it can hear you very well, even in a very loud kitchen environment, for example. You have the dishwasher running and you have the sink running water, and maybe somebody's playing the television set in the living room, and Alexa can still hear you because of that digital signal processing. And so you can say, Alexa, what time is it? Alexa, what's the weather today? Alexa, in natural language, Alexa, you know, play a certain song, et cetera, et cetera. And people really, this has been a big hit. We launched it a few years ago. It has vastly exceeded our expectations in terms of volume. We have literally thousands of people dedicated to working on it.
And Google wants to be in that business, and
everybody
else wants to be in that business.
Everybody wants to be in that business. And so here, you know, we got the kind of standard, you know, two and a half year head start.
Let me talk about the Washington Post.
Yeah.
You bought the Washington Post without doing any due diligence. You were so impressed.
True.
with?
Well, no, I did no due diligence because I knew Don Graham for, you know, 15 years.
Did he come to you because he needed a...
If any of you know Don Graham, he's possibly the most honorable person in the world. So he just laid out all the warts for me. He laid out all of the great things about the Post for me. And no amount of due diligence could ever have gotten to more clarity than just talking to Don for several hours.
Why did you buy it?
I bought it because it's important. So I would never buy a financially upside-down salty snack food company. You know, that doesn't make any sense to me. But the Washington Post is important. And so it makes sense to me to take something like that. And I... Also, I'm optimistic, and I thought there were some ways to make it. I want it to be a self-sustaining, profitable enterprise. I think that would be healthy for the Post, and I think it can be done. Our approach is actually very, very simple. We need to go. It's hard to execute on, and it's going to take time. But the approach is simple. We need to go from making a relatively large amount of money per reader on a relatively small number of readers. That's the historic model of the Post. Two, a model where we make a relatively small amount of money per reader on a very large number of readers. That's the new model.
But that's your business model too, isn't it?
That's a better business model for the internet era. Yeah. And the Post is unusual, and this is one of the things from a business point of view why I'm so optimistic about the Post, is that it can go from being, it has historically been a local paper, a very good local paper, but it happens to be a local paper situated in the capital city of the United States of America. And so it has, its kind of geographic location is superb for converting it from being a local paper to a national and even a global publication. And so that's a gift that the internet brings. To do national and global publication in the days of print, super expensive. You have to figure out how to have printing presses everywhere, and distribution everywhere, physical distribution everywhere, very challenging. Today, that piece is easy. To get global distribution in digital form is extraordinarily simple.
Because it's an important newspaper in the nation's capital, most powerful country in the world, did you want it also because it would give you political influence?
No. And I think one of the reasons that Don Graham liked me as an owner is because he didn't think I would politicize it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think because it's in the capital city of the United States of America, it should not be, an overt, you know, you take the British model of newspapers and, you know, are they kind of left-wing paper or right-wing paper? Right. And there are certain people who, if they had bought the Washington Post, would have converted it in one of those directions. And I don't think that would be healthy for the Post or healthy for the country. And plus, I'm also, in that respect, I'm also a good owner because I'm so damn busy.
You and I sat last night with a former astronaut.
That was very fun.
Scott Kelly, who was there at the International Space Station for I don't know how many days. What is it that you hope to accomplish?
In space.
In space.
Well, this is, first of all, let's back up. This is a childhood dream. I fell in love with the idea of space and space exploration and space travel when I was 5 years old, and I watched Neil Armstrong step onto the moon. And you don't choose your passions choose you. So I'm infected with this idea. I couldn't ever stop thinking about space. I've been thinking about it ever since then. I did not just when I started Blue Origin, which is the name of this space company. I did not make a list of all.